Hi, this is Chris from Crossroads Paranormal Radio. Tune in to Mike and I every Sunday night at 10 Eastern, live on Blog Talk Radio. Join us at www.cprshow.com as we discuss various paranormal topics and interview members of the paranormal community. Crossroads Paranormal Radio, breathing life into the paranormal community.
I'm not. shaking this ball, and all I get is the number 8. Where's the snow? I told my psychic I wanted to know if I was going to win the lottery, and she asked me for the numbers. The death card keeps showing up in this deck. Maybe I should get a reflector on my scooter. I keep dreaming about frogs leaping into my bed. This book says I'm just horny. Having a bad day at the Wheel of Fortune? KarmaCast has answers. Check out KarmaCast.com for show listings and times. KarmaCast.com is a division of Mayhem Media.
You are listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
Rich Anders was born and raised in Austria. He attended Rollins College in Florida and graduated from the University of Vienna. Rich visited the Virgin Islands and ended up moving there, more or less. Must have liked it a lot. The Caribbean proved to be the right setting for writing his books. Anders' writing style embraces an eclectic spread of physical and spiritual principles, ultimately shedding an unforgettable viewpoint on the essence of God, the devil, creation, and existence. The website is richanders.com. www.richanders.com, all how it's spelled, RICHANDERS.com. We'd like to welcome Rich Anders to the show. How are you doing tonight, Rich?
I'm doing fine. Good evening to you, and good evening to your listeners.
Well, it's great to have you on the show, Rich.
Thank you for taking me.
Oh, no problem. Now, we mentioned a little bit, you know, what we're going to talk about, but I don't know if it's entirely how we're going to go. We kind of changed it up a little bit, but I think this is going to be very, very interesting. More or less, I mean, you want to explain how to contact people from in the afterlife, spirits, so to say, whatever you want to call them. And after that, how would you handle something as monumental as that, right? How would you actually communicate with these people? What would be the way to do it? How would you behave during these contacts, so to say? Am I correct, Rich?
Yes, you are correct, and I want to make a suggestion to your audience. If they are interested to know and get to be able to make contacts with people who, you know, spirits or dead relatives, etc., mm-hmm. I would suggest to get a sheet of paper and a pen, because I'm going to give a number of suggestions how they should go about it, and if they don't write them down, they will forget some of it.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do the same thing because we forget everything here, Rich. So,
definitely. Aren't you taping the conversation?
Yes,
yeah,
we are.
we don't listen to our past shows as much as we should because, you know, when you record them, you're kind of like burned out by the end of the day. So, you know what, you're right about that. He actually makes a pretty good point.
And I do oftentimes take notes during the show. So
we're writing them down. That's the best thing to do. So I'll tell you what, the floor is yours, Rich. Whatever you need, you let us know. We're right here. I'd like to hear what you have to say.
I want to know because, you know, Rich, one of the things that we do is try to hear from people who've passed on. We try to record them. We try to get their photos. We try to get them on video. We try to get them on audio. We try a lot of different things, and sometimes we get voices from beyond, and sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what methods you've come across that work.
Well, it really depends who you are and what kind of energy you have. There are low-energy beings, humans, and there are high-energy beings, like, you know, like the people in high positions, like the president of a country, etc. So I don't want to make that distinction right now in order not to confuse you. What I want to suggest is this. Get to know what you're dealing with. And in order to know what you're dealing with is, you have the ability, and practically everybody has the ability, to make contact with someone who lived before and who now can be called a spirit or a ghost. Now, to make the contact, there are various methods. You can use the one that I'm going to suggest and recommend a little later. You can use the Ouija board, which is a very problematic thing to do if you don't know what to do, because this one is open to the influence of negative spirits that can do nasty things. Mm-hmm. Or you can develop the ability to become a telepathist, like I am, and then you can talk to people who lived before, like I talk to you. Now, what I think what can be recommended, because it's achievable, is that I tell you how someone can establish contact with someone he or she had a relationship with. It could be a mother, could be a lover, could be a child, etc. Because that's the easiest way to do. And you don't need a Ouija board for that. I don't recommend that because, as I said, that can be problematic. Everybody should know that there are spirits in every person. There are, because a person without spirit is dead. A spirit is the essence of life. And when somebody dies, the physical body stays here and the spirit moves on to a different realm, to the realm of the spirits. Now, this realm is manifold. It's multifaceted, you can say. Now, the name of your show is Ghostly Talk, so let's first talk about ghosts.
Okay.
Ghosts are those spirits of the people who are stuck in this world, in this dimension. They have an attachment to a loved one, like to children, or they have an attachment to a house, and they can't leave. And so they are stuck, and they are attached to this person, they are attached to this house. And these are the ones that you usually find in movie productions or in TV shows of who don't really know what they're dealing with. What they really are, these are lost spirits. They are confused. They don't know where they are. They don't know what they're doing because they are not here anymore. Many of them don't even know they died. Now, the thing is, there are people who are good and people who are bad. And dying doesn't change anything. Hmm. So these ghosts can be good or they can be bad. Now, the spirits or ghosts don't have an energy metabolism based on a physical, a basis like we do. We eat and we digest and from there we get the energy.
Mm-hmm.
A ghost doesn't have that. So if you have a bad spirit, the way he can get the spiritual energy to pump up his being is that he scares people. Now, if he scares people and people are afraid, they emit negative energies, and this ghost absorbs and can create possible problems. So the first thing, if somebody wants to make a contact, is to think whether the person he wants to make a contact with was good or bad to him. If this was a good person, then you're okay. If it was a bad person, don't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this person can do bad things to you by misleading you. Now, but to make the contact, the easiest way is the following thing, and this is the first advice I can give to anyone who wants to make a contact with somebody who passed on. Before you fall asleep, when you're in bed, before you fall asleep, and right after you wake up, your mind is in sort of a semi-conscious state. In this state, it's easy for people on the other side to contact you. Now, you can direct the contact by doing certain things. For instance, you have memories of someone, like a woman who lost her husband. She has memory of that husband, that they were in bed, they were cuddling up, they were having a great time, they were had a loving relationship. And in this half-conscious state, if the woman thinks of that, the message gets through to her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has an easy time to contact her. Now here comes the thing. The contact initially will not be clear at all. It will be feelings, it will be emotions. So the woman is in bed, she thinks of her dead husband, about the great times they had together, about the great times they maybe had sex, and how much she enjoyed it. And she's thinking about it, and she eases her mind, and her husband can come through to her. And she gets the feeling that he's with her, that he's cuddling up side by side with her. There are no words, but there are emotions, emotions of love and of tenderness.
Yes, yes.
And that's the very best way you can make a contact. On the other hand, if it's like a mother wanting to make contact with a child, you just think of the beautiful times you spent with a child that you lost. And here comes the next very, very important advice. Don't be sad. Sadness is a negative feeling. And the spirits that you want to call in, you want to call in their positive side. If you're sad, you emit negative energies, and the positive side of these spirits cannot come in. And here comes somewhat problematic thing. If you insist to be sad and to have negative feelings, you essentially hurt the loved one on the other side, because there on the other side you have the division between positive and negative energies. The positive energies, like feeling of love and joy, positive memories of time spent together, send in positive energies, and the spirits who don't have an energy metabolism, as I mentioned before, they thrive on that. So if you think of a loved one in loving, positive terms, you essentially nourish them with positive energies, and you will make it very easy for them to come through to you. As I said, initially only with feelings and emotions. But if you keep this going for a certain time, many people with whom I talk and who I taught this method said that after a while, their emotions were substituted by words and then by sentences. And some of the people who took my advice can now talk fluently with their spirits they called in. And usually it's a sister, it's a mother, it's a child.
Do they get the spirits that come through? They sound like they did in life?
As far as their voice is concerned,
they don't sound
at all. The what they say materializes in your mind as thoughts.
Okay.
So, many people who are being guided by spirits don't even know that it's not their own thoughts.
Interesting. So you have a thought connection kind of thing with the spirit that you're trying to reach.
Yes. Yes, you have thoughts are spiritual energy. When you think, it's nothing physically. It's not your brain that does the work. The brain is just the intermediary between your physical being and the spiritual being. But if you think, you do it with your mind. And so if somebody on the other side is doing the same with his or her mind, you can make a contact, and it's telepathy. It's called a telepathy. And some people are very strong telepathists, like I am. And most people do have telepathic abilities, and I believe that they can develop them if they follow the guidelines that I'm giving you.
And I'm thinking along those lines as well, but what does it feel like to get a thought from someone else? Like, does it feel like your own thought, or how can you tell the difference?
Yeah, what's the difference?
That's a very good question. Initially, people think that they're crazy or just fantasizing because it feels like being your own thoughts.
Okay.
Right.
And then people say, how do I know that I'm not thinking this myself? How do I know that somebody else is telling me? And I know a lovely lady who is very critical, who at the initial stages of her telepathic communications was very suspicious of these things, and finally it took quite a while until she accepted that it was not herself who was thinking these things.
Well, people that have, I mean, I'm wondering if there's any correlation. People that are diagnosed with schizophrenia, I mean, they hear these voices in their heads, right?
Well, he's saying it's not a voice.
It's not a voice.
It's a thought. It's a conjoining of you and another, you know, your spirit or soul or your mechanism
and another
mechanism,
yeah.
Just somebody who happens to be no longer physical present or physical.
Yeah, they're no longer alive.
Right? And alive, yeah.
Alive.
So it's a conjoining of two.
Okay, and schizophrenia is people that hear voices.
May I interrupt for a moment?
Yeah, yeah.
As I said, many people say, am I crazy?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You ever heard that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Crazy to think that somebody talks to me, that I can talk to someone who I can see, and here comes the next step. I would advise people who are able to develop this ability not to tell anyone, because other people will think you're crazy.
Well,
it happened to me. It happened to me when I was in St. Thomas. You know, once a friend of mine who was a big fan of Elvis Presley asked me to make a communication for him with Elvis Presley, and then this. This fool went and told everybody. So I was stamped, you know, the guy who talks to the Elvis Presley spirit, you know. Mm. It was not good for my business. I had a retail store, and some people stayed away because they didn't want to have anything to do with this crazy guy who talks with the spirit. So
wow.
Be careful.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I think in this day and age, things are starting to open up a little bit more. We were just talking about that earlier with Bob here.
Right, right.
That, you know, that the idea, you know, the study of the paranormal experiences people have, whatever it may be, you know, it's becoming a lot less taboo, I think, nowadays. But still, I think there is that aspect, like you're saying, Rich, where some people are going to think you're a little weird if you're talking to the spirit, if you're talking to a spirit. Whether it's Elvis Presley or not, I think people are going to think you're kind of off the cuff, Doug.
Sometimes
that's exactly it. So I'm where I am now. For instance, for this communication or this interview, I didn't tell any of my friends to listen in.
I don't
want to lose them.
Yeah, we get that a lot. Anyway, so when you're in contact with somebody who you love, you'll get their, who you knew and love, you'll get their thoughts,
yeah,
commingled with yours, and eventually with practice you'll be able to tell the difference between yours and their thoughts, because these will be ideas,
correct,
that would never have occurred to you. And I understand that there is one other aspect of communicating with the deceased, and that's how to behave, because you mentioned,
yeah, yeah,
that I wonder, it's not like then when you're like going to hang out at the beach or go to the pub or you're going shopping with your friend or ex-loved one, but what rules are there then for this communication?
Well, the rules for behaving is, number one, if you have a contact with someone who was mean to you and nasty and bad for you during your life, And this spirit manages to make a contact with you, then you immediately terminate the connection,
mm-hmm,
because it will not be good. Usually, spirits like these are in hell, and whenever they make a contact, a lot of negative energy comes through, and that can influence your life over time, not right away, but over time. I give an example. When I started out with this, communications, I knew nothing about it. And I was using a Ouija board, and anybody could come in. And I noticed that my dog was a good indicator whether it was a good or bad spirit.
Oh.
My dog, somebody came in, and you know, someone I knew, and he would stand there and look at some place and just wiggle with his tail and be happy. Like when my wife's mother came in, he loved her very much. He was so excited and so happy. But there were negative spirits came in. And once a very nasty one came in who possessed my dog, and my dog attacked me ferociously.
Oh my!
And
wow.
I could not subdue him until I got the great idea, said, leave my dog. And then, since somebody living in a spiritual, in a material plane, has a stronger spirit than the one who comes from a spiritual plane, when I said, leave my dog, he had to obey. And my dog, immediately stopped attacking me. And another thing was, once there, so I always made a point to have my dog present when I had a communication. And once he was so afraid, he crawled under the coffee table. And afterwards, he couldn't get out because it was so he was a big dog, a collie, and the coffee table was very low. So he couldn't even get out.
Oh,
he had to lift the coffee table off him. But I got the message. This dog was incredibly psychic. He knew whether there was a bad or a good spirit communicating. And I would advise if you or the listeners embark on this journey, keep your animals with you. Cats and dogs are very psychic. And if they are afraid, immediately cut the communication.
Very good advice, Rich.
Very good advice, yes.
Your website, of course, is richanders.com, RICHANDERS.com. And you've got books available there?
On the website, correct, Rich?
Well, I have books. Not completely. I have ample and generous reading samples for every book I have on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy my books. And for people like you who are interested to know more about this spiritual aspect of life, I have one book which is called The Great Mysteries, and there's one chapter that says spirituality, and there are about 40 different manifestations of spirituality, from telepathy to religion to empathy to remote viewing and premonition. I give example for every one of them. It's like an instruction book for people like you. You should really read it.
This
if you want,
yes.
I can send you this chapter for free.
Absolutely.
I think I sent it to Scott already.
I should have it in my inbox.
You're going to forward that to me.
Absolutely.
But I am very interested in your books. So I will, of course, be visiting richanders.com.
Check it out, guys.
As possible, and picking up his books. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you,
Rich. We
have to go to break. Yeah,
we do have to go to break, and that's why I'm, richanders.com.
Yeah, definitely check that out.
Info.
Rich, stay on the line. Don't leave us just yet, okay? Hang on for one second.
Okay.
Coming up, Dan Hall of www.central-state.com.
I am. Been a busy show here.
I know.
We'll be right back after this.
For more information, visit ghostlytalk.com.
Shadow governments, strange rituals, new world
order. Shadow governments, strange
buried treasures,
new
planetary mind control,
military cover-up,
corporate
shadow governments, strange rituals, new world order, buried treasures, planetary mind control,
unidentified flying
objects,
presidential
assassinations,
population control, ancient rights, pyramids,
fascism,
aluminum,
fascism,
apocalypse.
Out there.
It's a strange world.
Visit outthereradio.net for more information.
Between our souls and you are waiting. Buddha, Vishnu, the Dalai Lama, Isis, Baal. What do all of these ancient gods have in common with each other? They're all going down! World of the Unexplained, conservative paranormal talk. Big on God, big on guns. Our God can beat up your God.
Do you feel like there's something happening in your home or business? Something you can't explain? Do you think that whatever is happening seems to be paranormal? Do they exist? Florida Ghost Hunters at FloridaGhostHunters.com are looking for haunted locations throughout Central Florida. Let the team at Florida Ghost Hunters investigate your paranormal experience. Their mission is to disprove a haunting with science, to find a reasonable explanation to a problem, and whatever is left becomes evidence. FloridaGhostHunters.com. If you've experienced paranormal activity in your home or business, you are urged to visit FloridaGhostHunters.com and click Need Help. FloridaGhostHunters.com.
Ghostly Talk.
Central State Mental Institution, menacing and still threatening, stands empty, releasing its last patient in the early 90s. Once known as the Hospital of the Insane, it first opened its doors in 1848. The grounds of Central State hold many secrets, some of which will be revealed here, but others are lost forever.
Something a little different, I guess.
I like different.
You like that, don't you? Well, I stole that from Dan Hall.
Oh, that's good.
I'm sure
that's good.
He loves me right now, actually.
Hey, you ripped that off.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
I'm Bonnie.
And we do have on the line, just with a brief little intro like that. We usually read bios and stuff, but I saw a chance to get out of doing some more work. So,
so we figured, what the heck?
Let's play it. Well, how better
actually,
can you explain?
Actually, that was better than...
Any bio reading we could ever do. Yeah, butchering bios. I don't want to do that. I'd like to welcome Dan Hall to the show. The actual website is www.central-state.com. Okay, central-state.com. Dan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, you're welcome. And also we have Marlene Isaacs on the line, too, and her website is centerofpeace.com. Marlene, you there?
I am right here, honey.
Did I pronounce it correct?
Yeah, Marlene.
Marlene, okay. Yeah. I have that memory of a goldfish nowadays, so
dad made it up, so it's an unusual name.
Well, welcome to the show, guys. Dan, I wanted you to come on the show, and you guys obviously have this DVD out, correct?
Right. Yeah, it's available off our website, and you can get it Film Baby. And actually, we're negotiating a little bit with Netflix to get it out on Netflix.
Cool to have that out
there. But buy it from our website, though. That's the best way.
Well, you know what? I agree with you on that. I'd rather see people buy them directly from you guys than going through a middleman.
Yeah, it just makes it easier for us to do more research and more stuff. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's just better. So.
Now, as far as this is, I mean, the video, obviously, from the intro we put in, Central State Mental Asylum, you guys obviously filmed the DVD of investigating this place, exploring the place, am I correct?
Yeah, there's the DVD's got probably 2.5 hours worth of footage and interviews and things about Central State, which is a mental institution that was closed in 1994. It was opened in 1848, and... At its heyday, there were 3,000 patients there, living there. And typically, when you got into Central State, you didn't leave. You pretty much stayed there.
Really? Yeah.
Ooh.
This is the Central State that's in Indianapolis?
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
Oh,
right. Oh, coincidentally, there you go.
Yes, I wasn't a patient or anything. I was actually.
Yeah, right.
He needed to be, but.
I was actually there.
I think all the patients say they were never patients.
Right. And but I went there, and it of course is abandoned. But mm-hmm. it is. I want to point out mm-hmm. that it is not okay to be ghost hunting
exactly.
there.
Yeah.
Right. That
when,
is.
When were you there? When were you there?
When it was not okay to be ghost hunting.
Oh, well, okay. You may have coincided with some of our. We had permission, but yes, other people weren't. Yeah.
Nice job, Doug. Hey.
No, we also had permission, but evidently not from everybody we needed permission from.
That happens with that place too.
Yeah.
It's a crazy place like that.
Evidently, there's fights going on between is it police? Is it Park Service? Is it the city of Indianapolis?
Mm-hmm.
Or they have no idea who is supposed to patrol it, so they all do, and none of them talk to each other. So do not go
there.
That's
a pretty good. You summed it up.
It's pretty much what happened to us, because we got stopped like six times, and finally the very last time it was, well, I don't talk to them. I don't know anything about them. And I'm saying, get out. So we got out.
And I got chased by dogs there. That's my fondest memory.
Yeah.
We were fortunate because we had, what's fascinating about the DVD is it's as it happened. It's not anything like the stuff you see sometimes on television that's made up or storyline. When the things you see, that's why I'm dressed like I am. You probably noticed I was dressed in a long dress going down, and ended up going down in tunnels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was like in 2002, 2003, whatever. I thought I was going to be there for 10 minutes. James goes, come on down here and check something out. And like hours later, in this long chakra dress, I had a Vivian Tam chakra dress. I was dressed like I'm going to a tea somewhere. And I think I was wearing the chakra symbols for protection. And it's exactly how it happened. That's the best part of it. That's how I like to do my work. I don't like to know exactly this happened there and this happened here. I like to be in the moment with the spiritual psychic work that I do.
Well, that really ties in. I got to mention this, Marlene, because we were talking to Jim Horan earlier, Dr. Jim Horan, a little while ago here on the show tonight. And we were discussing this with Bob, who was here earlier, who was
right.
interviewing us for his first
Mike, a.k.a. Bob.
Has anything, we've been so busy tonight, I'm like sweating right now. We've been so crap going on. We were talking to Bob before the show. Mike, let's call him Mike. Just relax, Bonnie. Can I call him Mike, please?
Well, he's not here, so he's not in mortal danger anymore.
Okay, so let's call him Mike.
Yeah.
And that's one thing we mentioned to Mike, and you mentioned that, Marlene, is that you didn't want to know about any of the areas you're going to, what supposed haunts were there, what people may have seen.
Right.
You don't want to be front-loaded, right? And
no,
that's one of the things Jim mentioned was that, you know, a lot of people, when they go into these situations, they're already front-loaded with, well, the spirit of, an Indian lady comes here and, with a head in her hand or something like that. So you're already freaked out before you go in there.
Right? That's one of the reasons I was not going there to ghostbust the place. I had a family adventure film that was on Showtime for about a year and a half. Just now finished up the 606 season, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, we were shooting that out there, and the things that happened while we were shooting that film sparked me to kind of figure out and find out more about what was going on there. So that, like when we lit up the side of the building, we got that face in the curtain, and then we're all freaked out about that, and then after 12 o'clock, it disappears. It's just the weirdest kind of stuff, like that door shutting and things moving. And so I purposely did all that research of the place and then brought Marilyn in to kind of verify some of the stuff that we had found, and it was really interesting how that correlated with a lot of the factual stuff. So.
And Marilyn, you were the psychic on site there for this particular, for this DVD, correct?
Right. There's some other people in the film, but I was separate from them. I'm in pretty much in there by myself, which is how I kind of like to do my work too. And yeah, I've been doing my work full time for 36 years. I'm a healer and intuitive, and I was born remembering where I was before, and I do healing. And so my purpose to go was not worshiping phenomena. I was there to heal the place. And there's one particular scene where, after I do a prayer and a healing and a cleansing, you actually will see green orbs dance up off of my hands.
Really?
And that's not enhanced. If you watch the movie, do your homework now. Watch it more closely. Then it's wild.
minute to minute, it was like that. I mean, everything you saw, nothing was scripted, nothing was rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I pick up on the name, just different things through the whole movie that fascinated me, because I like to just be in the flow. I try to stay totally in the moment anyway, and that's how I like to do my work. But my purpose was to heal, I believe, whatever's happened on the earth before something's built. And this was, I believe, an Indian burial ground. And I think it was a very powerful vortex that this building got built over. And I think they probably desecrated some things. And it's like power spots. You can use them for negative or positive. And that's why there's such a swirl there.
Okay.
Do you know who built the building? Whose idea was it? And I know you said it was like 100 years ago or something. It was a long
1848. And it was, a woman.
150 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Bolton and her husband, they donated the land to the city, basically. It's built on a premise back in the day that it's 160 acres, and there was a whole geometry thing involved in that, where they try to make it self-contained units. Once you got on there, they had laundry facilities and farming and cattle and all kinds of stuff, so that it was just a self-contained little community, and they didn't have to do anything once they got there but be there.
Mm-hmm. This is actually disturbing, because it sounds like the same kind of philosophy as the, and it's kind of freaky, the Ohio State...
you're talking about Mansfield.
Mansfield, Ohio.
Yeah, Mansfield Reformatory.
The Ohio State Reformatory.
Yeah.
The fellow who pictured it had built a community kind of thing, and then it was not only self-sustaining, but any of the funds that they would sell extra things that they were creating and growing and doing, and extra services, they would sell that to locals. So what would happen is it would actually make money. now this is kind of now that though is a reformatory. That's a prison.
Yeah.
Right. This wasn't supposed to be a prison. It was supposed to be, you know, obviously a place of healing, an asylum, a place to go and get your stuff worked out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, undesirables with mental conditions would have to go there. And so this was supposed to be somewhat different than a prison, yet it was based on a surprising...
self-sustaining. A lot of prisons are self-sustaining.
They did really, it wasn't like anybody was purposely trying to torture people back in the day. They didn't have psychotropic drugs, and so, you know, in the late 1800s.
Right.
But maybe you had bipolar or something, or you were schizophrenic, and they didn't really know what to do with you, so they put you down in these tunnels. Or you had autism or whatever, they put you in these tunnels and change you up because that's what they thought would be good. To deprive you of human contact and light would somehow cure you, and so it took a while for them to figure out that wasn't the way to go.
And the paradox was this building, the original building, the old building that's now torn down, but it appears in the film, is fabulous. You think you're in this, it's like, they call it the Seven Gables, but there's actually eight gables. And it's like this magnificent castle-looking building, which it was based on, they built other buildings like this for mental institutions.
Like Danvers,
mm-hmm. in Connecticut, I think. And so that's the paradox. You would have this fabulous building with, you know, very few doctors and all these things. Well, they gave them opium. That was one of the things we found in the records. But they really, right, it was a different era.
It was the national research facility for syphilis. They were trying to find a cure for syphilis, and how they would treat patients is they would give them malaria to cure the syphilis, because the fever would kill the syphilis, and then they would give quinine to kill the malaria. It was just that kind of thinking.
My God.
Yeah.
Not that they were trying to do anything, you know.
They did a lot of lobotomies there, too.
They just didn't really know. I mean, they were just experimenting. So a lot of those people that were in there are basically took the hit for us today whoever's on Prozac or we're taking something for antidepressants or all kinds of stuff, because they were the guinea pigs for our society today, a lot of those people.
There's some people buried on the property too, isn't there?
I think they're designated, the city plot that I saw there is an unmarked grave site, which they've taken the, somewhere along the line, they've taken the headstones off and move that, but I think there's still people buried there. And some of the research, and even in, it's even documented, it's the people that didn't want to have their faces shown on the DVD, that they found bodies were in places where they weren't supposed to be. So
yeah, they started to dig and find bodies.
Yeah, I don't think they know exactly where the whole graveyard starts and where it stops. And that's, I think that's been a big issue for that place.
Oh. And then we talked to someone, and I had picked up, I'm very in touch with Indian mounds and different things, and sacred geometry, and had a long history with Serpent Mound over in Ohio, and property that backed up into it for a long time. And I, the minute I saw that property, I knew it was a sacred area that had been desecrated. And we've talked to a few people that said that at one point somebody, they found people buried head to head. That's ceremonial burial. But they, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff we've heard.
Yeah, they were, that's right, they were drilling a pilot well for something, and they struck that grave, which was outside of the boundary graveyard. This is from testimony that we got from someone. And they found people that were buried head to head, which is, is an Indian burial, I think.
Well, Marlene, quick question from Marlene. You said when you came there, you got this feeling that this was an Indian burial ground. I'm just wondering, you know, intuitively, like, what sparked, what told you that? What was the earmark? I'm just wondering what
it was vibrational. The way I do my work, I hear, feel, see. I have all of it. I'm clairaudient, clairvoyant, it's integrated with my personality. So I'm kind of the empath. I just kind of walk into a place or go to a place, and all levels of kind of things start. I just kind of become one with what's happening there. And so I was getting visual, I was getting emotional, I was getting, you know, knowledge about it. This information was coming through.
Okay. I mean, I'm just wondering, you said you, as soon as you came there, you felt the
No, that's a good question, because it helps you understand how we do, different people do perceive things. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Dan.
Yes.
I want to know what you thought, because I remember driving up to and through the place in the daylight and then again at night. What did you think the very first time you saw it?
Well, I was from a whole different space. And so when I first saw it, I thought, this is really cool, because this looks just like the orphanage that I need for my movie. And then when we pulled in there, we were filming, and it happened to be on a Friday the 13th, no joke, and it was a full moon. And, you know, I didn't think a thing about all that ghost busting stuff. I was just trying to get my movie done. And when all the stuff started happening, and when my own daughter, who was in the movie, in the RV, and she comes out at like 1 o'clock, she says, "Dad, the TV just turned red."
Wow.
And I'm thinking, okay, well, change the channel. It's on every channel. So, I kind of thought then that we were, but, you know, I didn't feel fear at that point. I have never really felt threatened by the place, although it has made makes me sick, physically sick, when I edit on it, like a couple days before, and usually a week after working on it. It's just that powerful, and I'm not sure. Marilyn could probably answer that.
Oh yeah, I can tell you some story. Yeah, absolutely.
But it was just a very it's like going into a like another place in time, like a parallel universe. I know that's sort of cliche, but it's almost like you go in there, and it's just surreal. Things, the smells you smell, the things that happen, and even the sounds from the outside, when they penetrate through the ground and weave through all the stuff, they just take on a whole new meaning. It's just really, it's a special place. It's very different.
You said that I noticed you said something, Dan, that you said this makes you physically sick. Well, it was making you physically sick when you were editing this film, am I correct?
Yeah, right.
I've heard this from other filmmakers who are working on similar type projects. I've talked to people that were actually working. Of course, their name escapes me right now because I can't remember anything on the air. But this particular couple was working on the Bell Witch Haunting, the independent Bell Witch Haunting film. And then they said they were experiencing similar phenomena when they were trying to, you know, edit the film and do stuff to it and whatnot. As a matter of fact, they actually lost a portion of the film because the little studio they worked in burnt down.
Go figure,
it
right?
It actually burnt down, and it burnt up the hard drive that all this data was on, and it was they couldn't retrieve any of it. Totally destroyed the hard drive it was on.
Well, I'll tell you how this not only did I get sick, and I would get the kind of things where you can't get your balance, that kind of stuff. This is prior to going out to the location, so we get our permits and all that kind of stuff, and we get ready to go, and it would happen. I just had to fight through it. But the guy who, I mean, and everybody felt ill in some sort of way, and things would happen to them. They'd be in a restaurant someplace, and they would smell the smell of Central State, and they would call me. Dan, I'm smelling the smell of Central State. Where are you? Well, I'm over in a restaurant place.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, I think, is the guy who wrote the music for a lot of this. Now, he became, right before the premiere, he started working on the music, and he became sick. He was just kind of fighting, and he became progressively more ill until he was hospitalized. And he had to go to the hospital. The night of the premiere, I had to take the phone and hold it up to the screen, hold it up to the audience so that he could hear them clapping and that kind of stuff or whatever.
Oh, no.
The music. But he was in the hospital because of that. And after premiere, he got better and he was fine.
He was not, and he never set foot there.
He never even, yeah, not even one. He didn't even look at the place. He just saw the footage. So
are we going to start the curse of Central State rumors?
No, because we cleared it. And I tell you, the last time, I was in there in 2003. That's where you see me in the long dress. Then
yeah.
I'm in an orange top, and that was last September 15th. And that's where I'm with the group of people, and we're down in the tunnels.
Well, this September 2006 was the last time.
Or 2006 was right. That September, that was just this last, yeah, September 15th. And we were down. And I had overcome my claustrophobia anyway, but there's 5 miles of tunnels, 4 miles
of
tunnels.
5 miles of tunnels. Yeah. Yeah.
And all kinds of things were going crazy, just happening. And I'll tell you, it was so bad. And like I told Dan, fortunately I live in kind of a wooded area, but the minute I got home, I had to take my clothes off before I came to my own house. I would not come in with the ectoplasm, whatever you want to call the energy,
mm-hmm.
was so thick on my clothes, I had to take them off.
But we have,
seriously,
and not that I believed in this before, but we have Marilyn is, you know, kind of blessed the whole thing, and we have Raven Wolf, who's an Indian shaman. She's in the movie, and she also has kind of blessed it in that way. So, in a sense that, you know, the people that made it and were involved in it got ill. I think the people that watch it and the people that experience the part of it, I think they've all benefited. And we've had people who've come forth and found loved ones that were buried there. We've got a list of some of the people that are still buried there, and they've been able to reconcile that. They show it in meetings now for people that are around here that are, you know, either part of Central State or recovering or whatever, and they kind of use it as a catalyst to discuss things about mental illness and that.
It made closure for so many people, that worked there or that had loved ones in there or that, I mean, just wild stories have come out of it, of healing, which is wonderful.
It was almost like the psychic fever had to break on it. We had to make it all happen, and when the fever broke,
right,
then there was
a healing crisis, and that's what happens with healing. Sometimes you'll get worse before you get better, and that's I think what happened with that.
I think with the DVD that shows that progression, you can sort of see,
mm-hmm.
you know, back in the 60s, that old footage from the 60s we have, and how, you know, just to get the feel, the grit of it. You know, we had 3,000 people there, and only 9 doctors, probably 5 of them were only certified, and the other 4 were part-time, so.
Well, it sounds like you guys should film a part 2 of this, more or less for the aftermath,
of
how you people dealt with doing this.
But it sounds like quite a project. And how long did you work on the project?
I started shooting footage. There's footage from 2003, and then we shot, through editing and all that kind of stuff up until 2006. So there's a ton of stuff in there, and all the interviews and tracking down people, and they're still coming forward. I get anonymous calls on my cell phone or on my office phone about, this is John, I was there, and this happened to me in the tunnel in, you know, 1976.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. And the cool thing about it is, and I hope that they let us do this, the city is not, they're not sure what they're going to do with it and all that kind of stuff yet, but underneath the 7 steeples, they had 3 floors, basement and then 2 floors below that. And those 2 floors are still intact, including the dungeon part. So, and we were close to getting to that point, breaking through the wall there to get in to show those things. They left. Just like if you see in the movie, when they left in 94, they just left everything. They just walked up the door and shut the gate. Turned the light down and locked the key. But we're hoping that those floors are still intact with all the stuff.
Because there's murals, right? There was
a
famous artist that was a...
John Zawara, is a famous artist. He's painted murals there that are probably worth hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars that are just kind of there. So,
yeah.
Well, definitely.
Amazing.
Part two.
What a fantastic, what a fantastic project. The website is www.central-state.com.
Yeah, and they're
the DVD, order the DVD, pop it in, get some popcorn, and in my case, steak, because I'm on Atkins. But so watch the movie. It sounds fantastic. Central State Mental Asylum in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Dan Hall, Marilyn Isaacs, we'd like to thank you guys for coming on the show. We really, really, really appreciate it. Definitely something to check out, everybody. Go to central-state.com. Check out the DVD, like Doug said. Very, very fascinating. Guys, hang on the line for
Thank you for doing the project, and thank you for coming on and talking about it.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Hang on the line for 1 second. Don't leave us just yet. We're going to close the show out.
Yes. Thank you very much.
I am
thank
falling you. Apart, Doug.
Busy, busy show.
It's been like running a marathon since like 4 o'clock p.m. today.
Wow. Yeah, it's been quite a day, you guys. We have to thank Jason Offutt, Dr. Jim Horan, Rich Anders, and, of course, Dan Hall.
And Marilyn Isaacs.
And of course, new wife for winning the ticket.
Beth, congratulations.
Beth, congratulations.
We'll be calling you in a couple minutes.
Yeah, for winning the tickets
to... That was creepy.
I know, it was creepy, wasn't it?
To the Mid-South Paranormal Convention coming up in September at Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, man, can't wait. Clarion Hotel and Conference Center will pimp them. We don't do that very often, but that's where it's going to be at.
Exactly.
Every week up until then, we're going to be giving away tickets for the Mid-South. So tune in.
All you got to do is tune in, call in, and raise your hand and answer the question that Scott comes up with. You guys, so thank you to everybody for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Guests. Thank you to the listeners. Scott, I think that's it until next week, where you will be in a secret location.
Yes.
Oh, we didn't even mention that.
You are going
I can't
to
believe
be,
we didn't mention
totally
that.
Totally forgot about that.
We are not going. I'm going to be physically here in Michigan. You're going out.
The whole Ghostly Talk crew, except for Doug, will be in a secret location.
Yes.
Broadcasting the show next week. So we're not going to be here at the Haunted Winery. We're going to be in a secret location. So until next week, we're out of here, guys. Have a great week. Take care of yourself. This has been Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
Peace.
I need to go someplace where a man can think. Only the corrupt shall listen to now. I need to go someplace where I can think.
We demand fair and more accurate, balanced news coverage. Real people with real lives in your dramas and on your talk shows. And if we don't get it, we'll make it ourselves. Don't hate the media, become the media.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
Don't hate the media, become the media.